Welcome to the Marty and Laura Show. We're so excited to be joining you. We're here to talk about your dogs, your cats, and maybe even some small critters. Anything you've got a question?
We've got answers for all of it.
The Marty and Laura Show is brought to you by Veterinary Village. With locations throughout Wisconsin, Veterinary Village is dedicated to enhancing the quality of animal and human lives today and into the future.
All right, you guys, welcome to the Marty and Laura Show. I am Laura, and I have with me my dear friend,
Marty.
Yay. Hi. Look, every now and then we get the timing right and everything. It's crazy. So, Marty, how you doing tonight?
I'm great. Thank you.
Spectacular. And we have lots and lots and lots of listener requests. And this one kind of rolls a few together. So we thought that we would talk about kind of heart health, like all of the things that we should do to keep our pets heart healthy. So we've talked a lot about weight in the past, but there's a whole bunch more stuff that goes into this. Yeah?
Yeah, I think weight is probably the one thing we can control the most. Mm-hmm. But yes, there are other important things as well.
So let's look at it. The heart is kind of an important organ.
Well,
there's genetic,
yes.
There's environmental, there's,
right,
you know, questions about food and all of that kind of stuff. So let's start with like really major things that we can see go wrong with our dogs. And I don't know about cats. Do they have heart stuff?
Oh, yes, they do. But there's some interesting things about cat hearts as well. So,
okay.
And they're completely different.
Of course.
Remember, cats are not small
cats
dogs.
And cats are fluffy plants. They're not dogs. Got it. Okay. All right. Let's start with dogs.
Move. Plants that move across your couch.
Sure, they move. You just say that. Mostly they move to attack your leg. That's what I know
when
about cats.
You know, in the middle of the night when they're on your face going, feed me.
No, I'm opposed to that, just temperamentally. Okay, dog hearts. Talk to me about dog hearts.
Oh my gosh, there's so much to say.
It's a big project, so I want to kind of break it down into these are the things that you can do to help prevent it. These are the things that happen because of genetics or what have you. And these are the things that we can use to treat the various ailments.
Okay. So prevention, I guess we can't really talk about prevention without talking about genetics. Because from the very inception of a puppy, we can control their genetics to a certain extent. There are DNA tests and there are phenotype tests that we can do for cardiac disease. And I think it's really important if you're buying a dog from a breed that tends to have cardiac disease, that we start off with the foundation of do the very best you can to select a dog that is less likely to develop cardiac disease than others in its breed category or in other breeds. So we'll say Cavaliers are kind of the poster child for cardiac disease.
Doberman,
Great Danes, Boxers. There's just Irish Wolfhounds, Newfoundlands. There's some breeds that are predisposed to cardiac
breeds.
Disease. Yeah, a lot of them, but not all of them. So yeah, there's some interesting things. Cavaliers, well, all small breeds of dogs, every little dog is prone to cardiac disease as they age because of mitral valve insufficiency. And that's what we see a lot of in cardiac disease in Cavaliers. And we used to say, and it's getting better, we used to say any Cavalier over age 7 is going to have heart disease. Like, bada bing, bada boom, it was that universal in the breed. But Cavalier breeders are doing a lot to try and breed away from that. And they're also breeding away from some of the brain disorders. So with appropriate phenotype screening, they are doing a spectacular job of trying to make this breed healthier. But almost all small breed dogs have a tendency to have heart disease, mitral valve insufficiency, which is the heart murmur that we start to hear.
Why is that? Why the small breeds? I mean, I know it in giant breeds, but why the small breeds?
I don't know, but they do. If I have a 14-year-old dog on my exam table and I put the stethoscope on their chest and they don't have a heart murmur, I'm like, whoa, baby. Like, this is amazing. You are going to have a dog that lives to be 18.
Yeah.
So that's pretty exciting. but we don't always have that good a success. So many small breeds, I'm not going to say all, but many small breeds do tend to have cardiac disease. So it's important that you are annually going in for your health exam. When you go for your health exam and your vaccines, it's not about the vaccinations that you're there to the veterinary clinic for. And it's not about going to PetSmart and getting the shot. It's about going to a veterinarian that is going to take the time to listen to their heart, look at their teeth, you talk about senior lab work, all the stuff that we can do that we can preventively help manage these dogs better. And as soon as we start to hear a heart murmur, we're going to start talking about what can we do with your dog and what can you do at home to help manage this. So there's a really fabulous website called the Cardiac Education Group. It is absolutely spectacular. It's written for veterinarians by veterinarians, but there's a whole section in there for pet owners. So if you have a dog that's been diagnosed or a cat that's been diagnosed with cardiac disease, you want to go to the Cardiac Education Group and then find the little menu and scroll down and click on the for pet owners. And it's going to help you understand a lot of things about your dog or your cat's cardiac disease. And the basic protocols that veterinarians are currently recommending, there's a consensus statement from the American College of Veterinary Internal Medicine on how to manage cats and dogs with cardiac disease. So you can kind of read along as your veterinarian starts to talk about, do you need an EKG? Do you need a Holter monitor? Do you need an echocardiogram? What can you do for your pet to help them to have the best quality of life and length of life once they are diagnosed with a heart problem, heart disease? So you can read along with the playbook. It's meant to be there for helping you, and it is a wonderful website and a wonderful assistant. So what most of the time we're recommending for the dogs with cardiac disease is as soon as it's been mentioned to you that your dog has a murmur, you want to start at least once a month watching your dog, and maybe more often watching your dog when it's asleep, not when it's resting, not when it's running around in the yard. When the dog is flat out horizontal snoring, that you count how many times a minute that dog is breathing. And if it goes from 28, 32, 27, and then it starts to jump up to 40 or 45, you need to call your veterinarian and get in the office and get chest x-rays taken and see what the level of cardiac disease is. Now, you may decide the day your dog is diagnosed with a heart murmur to say, yes, please go ahead and take some chest x-rays. Let's see how big the heart is, because as the heart develops a murmur, the heart gets bigger and bigger on the chest x-ray. And we also know that dogs that see a cardiologist, that go in and see either a cardiologist or an internist that can do an echocardiogram, which is an ultrasound of the heart, that those dogs live longer, and those cats live longer when they see a cardiologist than when they see a general practitioner. That doesn't mean your general practitioner doesn't know what they're doing, but there's some nuances to medications that can improve the quality of life and the length of life for your dog. And it's not just about how long they live. It's how long can they live and still go out on a walk with you, or walk up the stairs to the bed at night, or, you know, all the things we want for our pets to be able to have a good quality of life.
Well, and I think part of what confuses me or kind of sends my brain off into different directions is there is a vast and myriad number of ways in which at least the canine heart can do weird things, from leaky valves to an enlarged heart to, you know, like this huge spectrum. So can you talk about maybe the three most common cardiac deficiencies that we see?
Sure. So leaky valves we're typically going to see in older pets, although there are some murmurs that are associated with really young dogs, like ventricular septal defects or tricuspid valve dysplasia, or most commonly patent ductus arteriosus, PDA. So those are the cardiac diseases that we see in puppies. We can hear a murmur. With a PDA, it's a really loud washing machine murmur. With other murmurs, they can be different styles of murmurs, different types, different parts of the chest you can hear them in. So you can hear some on the left, some on the right, some up in the armpit, you know, so moving the stethoscope around on the chest and characterizing the type of murmur that you hear is helpful, but it's not diagnostic. It's diagnostic to say that there's a murmur. And not all heart murmurs that are loud are necessarily bad. Usually the louder the murmur, the worse the disease, but not always. There are some conditions, particularly in young puppies, where there's something like a ventricular septal defect, which is a defect between the two large ventricles of the heart, that a little tiny hole can make a really loud noise. Oh, so wow. Loud noise doesn't necessarily correlate with bad disease. So we have puppies that are born with either strictures like an aortic stenosis or other kinds of things like holes in the heart or PDAs. Those can cause murmurs in really young dogs. Then we have the murmurs that we hear in aging dogs, Cavaliers after age 7, a lot of other breeds after age 10. And then we also have arrhythmias. Mm. Sometimes they go together and sometimes they don't. An arrhythmia is an irregular heartbeat. Now, it's normal for a dog to have an irregular heartbeat that it goes faster when they inhale and slower when they exhale. Mm. That's normal. That's not an arrhythmia. That's called a sinus arrhythmia. Absolutely normal. And dogs do it more than people do. You can actually make yourself do that if you deeply breathe and deeply exhale, but it's not as common in people as it is in dogs or cats. So we'll typically hear either a murmur or an arrhythmia or sometimes both. Last weekend, I had a Doberman that came in 11 years old, carefully bred, came from a great breeder, one that does all their health screenings, but nevertheless, this dog came in with cardiac disease. And it was pretty acute in onset. And initially, they thought it was something else wrong with the dog. But as soon as I saw the dog and laid a stethoscope on him, I could hear a murmur that we'd never heard before. And I had taken care of this dog since he was a baby. Every single visit, I saw him for many times a year. And he had an irregular heartbeat. So that's like the double whammy.
That's like trouble. The progressive, like it's changed over time.
Correct. And he's going to probably succumb to his heart disease. But we trucked him off to a cardiologist as quickly as we could. And got him in, and they're going to be able to make some recommendations. But nevertheless, cardiac disease is probably going to be the reason that this dog is lost. He's not going to make 16. He may make 12, but he's not going to make 16.
Honestly, 12 in a Doberman? Like, I'd be rooting for that.
Yeah. Yeah, you can't complain. So he's going to be on a different course of medication than a dog that just has a murmur. Because of his arrhythmia, because of the other advancements of his heart disease. Puppies with heart disease, some of them can go to surgery, like a PDA, a patent ductus arteriosus. They can go to surgery, and those can be corrected. They used to go in and just put a suture, just open up the chest, which is a major surgery.
Tiny details.
Much more major than opening up the abdomen. They'd go in and put a suture around the ductus that was not supposed to be there. It was supposed to close when the puppy took its first breath, but it didn't. And now they put in something called an Amplatz catheter in most dogs. And it's pretty cool. I have actually had two of my dogs have PDAs, and I'm not proud of that, but it happens in certain breeds. And I eliminated that whole side of the line and haven't seen it since. So I'm very astute and aware of what the genetic condition behind this was. So in that case, they put in an Amplatz catheter, and it's pretty cool because instead of opening up the chest and spreading the ribs and, you know, stopping the dog from breathing and heart beating and the lungs collapse and all the stuff that goes with it, it's really major surgery. They now make a little incision in the groin of the dog. They feed this catheter up into the heart, and it pops open like a little umbrella. So it goes from this little skinny thing to this umbrella thing that opens up, and it blocks that ductus.
Wow.
And instantly the dog starts to develop some scar tissue, and it closes it off instantly. And the dogs go home the next day with a little suture in their groin, like one little nick, and they go out the door, like nothing ever happened. So it's pretty great. Now, that doesn't mean we should breed dogs that have PDAs and just say, oh,
that is a fantastic treatment that is definitely new.
Yeah. But some of the cardiac diseases that we see in young dogs can't be corrected surgically. So you basically live with it as long as you can, put the dog on cardiac medications for as long as you can manage them, and realize that this is not a dog that's going to live to be an old dog. So unfortunately, you know, in spite of how careful people are with their breeding programs, those things still happen. So that's the puppy part of it. Kittens can have something similar. They can have PDAs. They can have all these other weird things as well. But cats tend to just be a little bit better with heart disease because they just live a different lifestyle. And not all cats are
right.
I mean, I've seen cats that walk around with heart murmurs their whole life and they never know anything's wrong with them. They live to be 16, like, woohoo, I'm good.
Doggett simplifies the puppy buying journey by connecting families with the perfect breed and responsible, health verified breeders. They are the only breeder marketplace that verifies health clearances and responsible breeding practices. Through their personalized puppy matcher tool and matchmaker services, they educate and guide buyers every step of the way, ensuring a seamless process and a perfect match for their lifestyle. From initial breed consultation to introductions with top breeders, Doggett makes responsible puppy ownership easy and stress-free.
And so that's actually my follow-up question. Do you see, and I'm asking this because I personally lived it, a lot of dogs with sort of minor leaky valve or just a little grade one murmur as a puppy that mature out of that, grow out of it, and live long, healthy lives? Or is that young dog's heart murmur a death sentence from the get-go?
Many puppies under 12 weeks of age will have what's called a functional murmur. Yeah. We can hear it. It doesn't sound very loud. It sounds like it's probably innocent. And many of them will go away as the dogs get older. So unless it's a PDA, most veterinary cardiologists won't echo a dog or cat until they're at least 12 to 16 weeks old. For two reasons. One is it's hard to see anything on the echo when they're that little. Mm-hmm. And two is because so many of them go away on their own that we don't worry about it. Now, the one thing I tell a lot of people is that puppies have a physiological murmur because all puppies are anemic. All kittens are anemic. You are born with a certain number of red blood cells, and when your body grows faster than your bone marrow can keep up with, you are anemic. Anemia is absolutely normal to a degree, not profound anemia, but to a degree. Mild anemia is normal in kittens and puppies. Absolutely. So that's one of the reasons we hear heart murmurs is because the blood is thinner, and I hate to use that term because that's not really accurate, but it creates more turbulence in the heart so we can hear a murmur. The other thing that happens, and I don't have a stuffed dog or a real dog here to hold, but a lot of times your veterinarian or your veterinary technician may hold the puppy and put the stethoscope between their hand and the puppy and kind of support them off the table while they're trying to get that puppy to sit still long enough to listen to their heart. Because puppies and kittens are like, you know, they're squirming around and they can be hard to get them to sit still. And so when you do that, when you hold them in that position, sometimes because the ribs are really flexible, you alter the chest wall enough and you affect the size and the shape of the heart enough that you can create a murmur that's not actually there.
Oh, wow.
So if your vet says, especially in kittens, but it happens in puppies with really flexible ribs too, if your vet says, oh, and their eyes get big and they're like, oh, I think I can hear a murmur, then that's time for you to say, okay, let's quiet the room, put the puppy on the table, try and give them something to look at or think about, like a little peanut butter or baby food, so that they can focus a little bit and they can listen again and see if that murmur is real or if it was caused by that deformity of the chest wall caused by the weight of the dog against the stethoscope and the change in the heart configuration just enough that the valves are a little leaky. So be really aware of that. The other thing that's kind of cool is we now have Bluetooth and electronic stethoscopes. So back in the old days, when you got old and you couldn't hear very well anymore, it was really hard to hear some of these really subtle heart murmurs. You could still hear the loud ones, but as you got older and your hearing wasn't quite as acute, you could lose that. But you can either get an electronic stethoscope now, so veterinarians that are older may have those, and they can actually not only hear it, but they can record the murmur, which is really cool. So you can record it to an MP3 file. Or if you have Bluetooth hearing aids, you can actually not even use the stethoscope in your ears. You just put the stethoscope on the dog, and it Bluetooths to your hearing aid. So there's some pretty impressive technological changes that have made being an older veterinarian and not missing
manageable
stuff a little bit better. So you put on your readers and you get out your electronic stethoscope with your Bluetooth and you're like, I'm still practicing. I'm good.
I am styling. All right. So that's baby puppies. Older dogs, you can see an acute onset or like a gradual onset. When you think about those dogs, describe some of the symptoms. Like I think of what I think of as the heart cough. Right? There's a specific cough that I say, eh.
Yeah. Yeah. The cough is most frequently heard first thing in the morning or later in the night, like 5, 6 in the morning, just before you get up or right after you get up. Because when the dog is laying horizontally and not up and moving around, fluid builds up in the lungs and they're more likely to have a cough at that point. So yes, there is a heart cough. Now, a loud, harsh cough is usually more of a tracheal cough, either because the heart is too big or because the dog has kennel cough or, you know, tracheal bronchitis, one of those kinds of things. So I think it's important that we know that that isn't necessarily the same kind of cough. The cough you have to worry about is the soft, quiet cough. That's fluid in the lungs. That's pneumonia. That's cardiac disease.
The heart cough. Like, I know that sound.
Yeah. Now, of course, that's different than a collapsing trachea, which also happens in small breed dogs. And again, that's that loud goose honk kind of cough. Mm-hmm. So if you touch the trachea or you manipulate the trachea and the dog has this, huh, that's usually up here. It's the cough that really scares you. It's the one that sounds quiet. That's the scary one.
Yeah.
So don't assume that that just, yeah. Go, if you think your dog has a cough and you're concerned about it, take your dog to the vet, take your cat to the vet, go in, have them checked out. If they say we'd like a chest x-ray, do this with your head. Yes, please take a chest x-ray. Don't cheap out on it. You need to know early on if your dog or cat has cardiac disease, because the earlier we diagnose it and the earlier we get them on appropriate medications, the better the quality of life and the length of life will be.
And so that is the perfect transition to my question about, okay, so we've got a problem and it can be managed in not every case, but in many cases. Am I right?
Yes. Almost all of these cardiac problems have medications. For arrhythmias, we have very similar medications to humans. For heart failure because of valvular disease or stenosis, we have diuretics, and those have been around for a million years.
Right.
Lasix, Spirona, which is furosemide, spironolactone. And there was just a study that was presented at the AKC Parent Club meeting on cardiac disease that spironolactone has a really important place in managing these dogs with cardiac disease. So diuretics are really important. Now, of course, they make the dog urinate more, but it helps clear the fluid.
Right.
And after the first couple of days on the diuretic, it stabilizes. So it's not quite as bad as your dog urinating a lake every night in the middle of the night. Back in the old days, we used to have digitalis, digoxin, which would help to make the heart a little bit stronger. But that was a wicked drug, and we don't use that at all anymore. It's well been replaced by pimobendan or vetmedin. Vetmedin is the trade name. Pimobendan is the generic name. And that is a major, amazing breakthrough. It's been on the market. They were testing it, I'm going to say probably 18 or 19 years ago. We saw some dogs at the university that were having it used on them in clinical trials. And so it's been on the market for easily 15 years. And it is absolutely life-changing for dogs and for some cats with cardiac disease. So we used to say in veterinary medicine, as soon as your dog is diagnosed with congestive heart failure, valvular disease, mitral valve insufficiency, that old dog stuff, they would live about 6 months. Well, now these dogs are living 2 and 3 years with medication. It's an amazing breakthrough. So if your dog is 14 and it lives another 2.5 years, like that's pretty great. That's much better than 6 months. But there's no human equivalent to this drug. So if you're talking to somebody on the human side, they're going to look at you like, I've never heard of this drug and I don't understand why you have a drug on the veterinary side. And there aren't very many, but we do have a few drugs on the veterinary side that don't occur on the human side. And I don't know if this is true or not, but I was told, and this might not be accurate, so forgive me if I'm wrong, but I was told that because it makes you feel so good and you do so well for so long, that when you fail very quickly. But they did not want that happening on the human side, because if you were driving a car, that would be dangerous for everyone. So I don't know if that's accurate, but it's an interesting thought. And there are definitely cardiac drugs that we see on the human side, we don't see on the veterinary side. But many things on the human side eventually come to the veterinary side, and a few things on the veterinary side make it to the human side.
Well, so, we do a lot of research that is involved. Yes. One of the great things that dogs particularly bring to us is studies on their diseases that provide information and insight for humans as well. So I think
Yep. It's pretty great.
Okay. So prevention, when at all possible, because heart disease is not specific to purebred dogs at all. It is across all types of dogs. When at all possible, find a dog whose parents have been health tested and have been cleared of this problem. So that's one thing. Weight management, we've talked about that.
And fitness in general, not just weight.
Yeah, that was literally the next word out of my mouth. So just like people, right? We want them lean and active. Like the more we do, the healthier we are. It's no different for dogs. Am I right?
Exactly. So if you can get out there and walk your dog for 20 or 30 or 40 minutes a day, it's good for you. It's good for the dog. Keeps your weight down, keeps your cardiovascular health good. Yes, we don't see cholesterol problems and heart attacks in dogs that we do in people, which is kind of interesting. But most other cardiac diseases that we see in people, they have a human equivalent, but probably not to the same degree. And, you know, there's kids with heart murmurs that live their whole life with them, or when they're 60 or 70, they need a valve replaced. There's there's functional murmurs in kids that we see in dogs. There's a lot of parallels, but they're not exactly all the same. So it's important that we identify the differences. But generally, fitness is always good for us and for our dogs. So get out there, do your walk or swim or whatever it is that you physically and your right. dog can manage to keep their cardiovascular health good. Treadmill, yeah. whatever it takes.
Absolutely. And then final observation, talk a little bit, and we've talked about it on Pure Dog Talk some, talk to us about feeding our pets and specifically the food that we feed them and some of the FDA research into food-mediated heart problems in our dogs.
Yeah, and a few years ago, everybody probably remembers 4 or 5 years ago, the grain-free concerns that we had with dogs with cardiac disease. And initially and immediately, most veterinarians jumped right to taurine and L-carnitine mm-hmm. as the possible causes. And there's still some suspicion that some lines of dogs, golden retrievers and a few other lines, have a tendency to have more cardiac disease if they're on those diets that are somewhat L-carnitine deficient. And where this comes from, and I think this is really interesting because when you're old, you remember the history behind diseases right. that the young people right. don't really understand. But when I graduated from veterinary school, dilated cardiomyopathy was a really big thing in cats. Now, we still see hypertrophic cardiomyopathy in cats, and we can still see it in dogs as well. But dilated cardiomyopathy was a thing. And we would have cats that would come in pretty regularly. Like my first year out of school, I worked at an emergency clinic. If at 10 o'clock on Saturday night, because I worked the overnight shift till 9 o'clock Sunday morning, if by 10 o'clock on Saturday night, I hadn't had a receptionist come back and say, so there's a cat coming in that can't breathe, right. I would go up front and say, okay, who missed the phone call? Because there's got to be a Saturday night special on every one of these Saturday nights I have this cat come in. Well, these cats would come in with a flaccid, dilated heart that wasn't effectively pumping, and then fluid would build up in their chest, and then they'd come in with a chest full of fluid. And sometimes you could pull the fluid out and get the cat stabilized, and sometimes the cat died before you could even do anything because it was that acute. Because cats are different than dogs. When dogs have trouble breathing, they let you know. They're like, hey, hey.
I can't
but a cat you. Goes, I'm good, I'm good, I'm good. Oh, crap, I'm not good anymore. And they're bad really fast. And it's not because they just got sick. It's because they've hidden their disease so long. Asthma, respiratory disease in cats. They're like, oh, no, really, but really, I'm okay. Until they're not. So we would have these cats coming in. Well, we knew back in those days, 45 years ago, that cats needed more taurine in their diet than dogs did to keep their retinas attached to the back of their eyeballs so that they didn't go blind. And that's why cats couldn't eat dog food. But, you know, there would still be farmers that would put out because they didn't want to buy cat food, so they put out dog food. Or cats that were on some of the low-end cat foods that would still develop these diseases, not with their eyes, but with their heart. And then Paul Pion, who actually developed Veterinary Information Network, which is just the most amazing resource for veterinarians ever thought of in the planet. He's brilliant. He's a practitioner from California. He discovered that taurine didn't just affect their vision, but it affected their hearts. So at that point, all the pet food manufacturers upped the amount of taurine in the food, and dilated cardiomyopathy in cats ceased to exist. So this was pretty great as a veterinarian to not have to walk into the exam room, look at a cat and go, your cat's not going to make it to the x-ray table. It's really bad. So it was a huge breakthrough. And I think it's kind of interesting that a lot of young practitioners don't know who Paul Pion is and where that came from, because he totally revolutionized not just cardiac disease in cats, but how all veterinarians communicate. Because we have this paid resource called Veterinary Information Network. They let all the vet students use it, and all the practitioners use it if they're smart enough to pay for it, because it will absolutely allow veterinarians to communicate with journals, with each other, on message boards, all this really amazing stuff that we can use as resources. So there's not an appointment that Dr. Zella walks into that is a sick pet without having already gone to his computer and looked up something on VIN. So when he walks in the exam room, he can like spout
That's
out
really
all
smart.
The new information. Right. Like, woohoo, look at me.
And taurine, my understanding, taurine is an ingredient.
It's an essential amino acid.
Okay, yeah. There we go. Amino acid, but it's from meat. Like you can only get it from meat. Am I correct?
Yes. It's an essential amino acid from meat. L-carnitine is similar to it, but not quite as essential. And cats cannot synthesize it from other amino acids. So for cats, that is why cats are obligate carnivores. So for the people who want to feed their cat a vegetarian diet, and they're philosophically into these kinds of diets, and I understand that, those cats have to have additional taurine supplemented in their diet. And so, like I said, because we knew taurine was essential for cats with cardiac disease, when this whole discussion about cardiomyopathy in dogs and where is this coming from and why all of a sudden are we seeing golden retrievers literally coming out of our ears with
cardiac disease. Well, not just goldens. I mean, there was dogs of every breed.
Right, but goldens were the most profoundly noted, and that's kind of where that first red flag went up in California when people went, whoa, something's terribly wrong. That's when they started to really identify, and veterinarians just kind of shook their heads and said, yep, it's probably taurine and L-carnitine, and there are probably some genetically predisposed dogs that need higher levels, but there's still a lot of not really fully settled discussions about some of these diets. So essentially, dogs and cats were meant to eat meat. They evolved eating meat. That's the way it is. They're not omnivores. We are omnivores. We can eat a variety of things, but dogs and cats are carnivores. Cats are obligate carnivores. Dogs are carnivores. And there's a distinct difference between those. So if you must feed your dog a grain-free diet or you must feed your dog a vegetarian diet because that is how you philosophically believe that your pet should be fed, and I'm not going to argue one way or the other, you just have to be aware that you need to read the label. And if you have any questions, supplement it or contact the company that makes the food and discuss with them the information on their label or that they're putting in their diet. Now, the World Small Animal Veterinary Association, WSAVA, has an amazing resource on that website for how to select a pet food and what questions you should ask a pet food manufacturer. So if you're looking for an unbiased opinion, and the World Small Animal Veterinary Association is international. It's not a U.S. company. Right. It's not dictated by the manufacturers, by any of that stuff. So go to their website, take a look at how to select pet food, and it's going to give you a lot of really good information.
Perfect. Okay. Well, there you go. Heart health on a Wednesday. Can't ask for a lot more. All right, Marty. Thank you so much. We appreciate you keeping our pets healthy, and we will talk to you again soon.
Thanks.
Thank you for joining us on the Marty and Laura Show. We're excited to bring you these unique, fun, fact-based conversations about pet health. From pro tips on selecting your new dog to what your cat's cough means and what you should do about it. We'll meet you wherever you are, in the car, on the treadmill, walking the dog. And we'll bring you a good laugh, a great story, and a bright idea every week. We hope you'll join us on social. Stop by the website to sign up for an extra tip of the week for your pet. While you're at it, do us a favor, please, and leave a review wherever you find your podcasts. The Marty and Laura Show is produced by Pure Dog Talk, Inc. Sound design and editing by Premium Audio Services.